We're on Daf Ayin Zayin Amid Beis. The Gemara on Daf Ayin Zayin Amid Aleph had presented what looked like a stira between two statements of Rav. On the one hand, Rav said Halacha Kerabdosa, which means Yad Pol Ala Tachtona, the principle that's based on the fact that a Pol cannot quit midday in the middle of the job, and yet Rav made another statement that poel yachol lachzor bo afilu b'chatzi ayom, and that's called yado al elyona. So on the one hand, Rav paskins like Rav Dosa, which means yado al atachtona. On the other hand, Rav says explicitly that the halacha is that yado al elyona, that a poel yachol lachzor bo afilu b'chatzi ayom. And in order to reconcile this, the Gemara says that perhaps Rabbi Dosa was machalek between Schirus and Kablonus. With regard to Kablonus, then Rabbi Dosa says, Yodo al Tachtoni, he was hired for the job, he didn't complete the job, he quit in the middle. In the case of a Poel, he was hired for his time to do work, not for a particular job, he's paid by the hour, paid by the day. There, even Rabbi Dosa would agree that Poel Yachol Lachzor Bo, and therefore Rav accepts the opinion of Rabbi Dosa with regard to a Poel Yom, and that's called Yachol Lachzor Bo. And on the other hand, he accepts the halacha like Rabbi Dosa that Yad Poel Al HaTachtona in the case of a Kablon, where he was paid for the job. Now, on the top of Daf Ayin Zayin Amid Beis, the Gemara tried to prove that a brisa that presents the machlokas between Rabbi Dosa and Chachamim would indicate clearly that Rabbi Dosa makes no distinction between schiris and kablonos. And straight across the board, he would hold yado ala tachtona, even in the case of schiris. And that's not good news for our possibility of reconciling the two statements of Rav. Omer of Nachum Bar Yitzchak, and this is the last thing we did in the previous shiur, Rabbi Nachman says that Rabbi Dosa does make a distinction between Schirus and Kablonus. And he accepts the sheet of the Chacham that a Poel who's a Schir Yom is Yodo Al Yono Yochel Lachzor Bo. The Bryce, on the other hand, that mentions that Poel Yochel Lachzor Bo only in a case of Ones, that's the Bryce is a case where Achazoso Chama or Meslo Mes, he got sick or he was unable to finish the job because he lost Nebuch, one of his relatives, and therefore he had to sit Shiva. All those are cases of Ones. So why then does the Braisa establish that Yochel Lachzor Bo because of Ones, if Yochel Lachzor Bo in case of a Schir Yom, even without Ones? So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says that the Braisa is addressing a case of a Dovar Ha'ovud, which means it's something urgent, it's time urgent, the job has to be finished immediately, and in such a case, even the Chachamim of Rav Dosa agree that Eina Yochel Lachzor Bo unless there are mitigating circumstances beyond his control and he's an Anus. So when the Braisa allows Yochel Lachzor Bo because of Anus, that's according to everyone, the Rabban and the Rav Dosa, because the Braisa is discussing a case of Dovra Avud. So at this point, we can still maintain that original understanding of Rabbi Dosa to distinguish between a Kablon who's not allowed to quit his job, he was paid for the job, he's got to finish it, as opposed to a Schir Yom, who is his own boss, he can decide if and when he's going to work and when he's going to terminate and quit. So we're up to Tnan, which you'll see about 7 or 8 lines down from the top of Daf Ayin Zayin Amid Beis. And I like Ayin Zayin because those are the first two letters of my name. Anyway, Tanan, we learned in a Mishnah back on Daf Ayin Vav, Kol HaMishana Yodo Al HaTachtona, V'Kol HaChozer Bo Yodo Al HaTachtona. These two statements are general statements that indicate a Psak HaLocha, That's the stoma de Mishnah. The Mishnah is establishing principles. And the Gemara says, I can understand the first principle, but not the second. Bishleim, the Gemara says, kol mishani yoda ala tachtona. This sasam lantana kirabi Yehuda. Now, we have a Mishnah that records a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. That's back on Daf Kuf, Amud Beis, and that in Bava Kamma. And that's a case of a tzaba. This is a professional dyer who received a natural wool in its natural state, its lavan, and he was commissioned to dye it red. Instead, he dyed it black. Rabbi Meir holds in such a case that the tzaboi, Meir basically holds that the tzabo was kone the tzemer b'shinui, by virtue of the fact that he dyed it red. And now, what happens is that he's still working on behalf of the Baal Bais who commissioned him, but he's going to have to give the value of the object that he stole. Why? Because Rabbi Meir holds that once he made this shinui, he was kona b'shinui, that gives him the din of a quasi gazlan, and he pays kishas hagzela. Now, that's not such a terrible thing, because the tzemer, as it's dyed red, is worth more in the market than the natural white tzemer, which is worth much less. I mean, as far as the Baal Bais who commissioned this tzaba, he's not interested in red. He has no members of his family, nor himself, that's interested in a red garment. He needs black. So in that sense, since the tzaba broke the conditions and violated the commission, therefore he was kone the tzemer b'shinu, because he changed it to a red tzemer. Now, Rabbi Yehuda holds no. There's no way that you can take this professional, this uman, and strip him of his status as an uman, and instead give him the status of a gazlan. He still remains an uman. He's not kona b'shinui in this case. However, he cannot claim full wages, and that's called yado ala tachtonu, which means he'll get the lower of the following two variables, either the shvach or the hotzah. It means if he spent more, that's called hotzah, then it went up in value as a result of the dyeing process, making it red. Then he cannot claim, if the expenditures exceeded the shvach, then he cannot claim the expenditures. He can only claim the shvach. If the shvach, on the other hand, exceeded beyond the value of the hotzah, so that means that the tzemer went up in value by 50, and the hotzah was only 20. That's what it cost the tzaba to, in raw materials and etc., to the expenditures in order to dye this wool. Then the tzaba, will only be able to collect the 20, not the 50. So that's what the Mishnah codifies here as kol hamishane yado ala tachtona, paskining, as it were, like Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Meir. But what baffles us is the next codification in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Ela kol achozer bo yado al tachtona. What is that, lasuye mai? What's that coming to tell me and to be mashmia? Well, what's the chiddush here? And the Gemara thinks, lav lasuye poel. It must be referring to what we call a schir yom, a worker who was hired to work for the entire course of the day, and then he quit midday. And on that, the Mishnah says, yado ala tachtona ke Rabbi Dosa. This reflects the shita of Rabbi Dosa. Now, this is going to be a problem, because there's no distinction being made here within the context of this general statement, all-inclusive statement of the Mishnah, that kol hachozer bo yodo ala tachtona, the emphasis on kol, this is a general all-inclusive statement, and it includes not just the schir yom, I should say the other way around, not just a kamlan, but even a schir yom. And in both cases, even in the case of a poel schir yom, Rabbi Dosa is reflected in this Mishnah saying, Yodo al hatachtona. We no longer have the ability, apparently, to, within the framework of Rabbi Dosa, to make this distinction between a poel who's a schir yom and a poel who's a kamlan. Now, the resha of that Mishnah reads the following: Hasoches ha'umnin v'chazu behem yodo al hatachtona. And the word uman is bepashtus reflecting a poel bekablonus. Usually an uman is a kablon. He's a professional, and you hire a professional to do a job. Here's the raw material, here's the wool. Give it back to me, dyed. However, the sefer of that same Mishnah, which is the part that we are focused on, and kolachozer bo yod al hatachtona, that's referring even to a schir yom. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah, that not only is a kablon under the rule and the rubric of chazu bo yod al hatachtona, but even a schir yom is chazar yod al hatachtona. And therefore, we must present the thesis that Rabbi Dosa, in his opinion of Yod al Tachtona, includes not just a kablon, but a schir yom as well. And that precludes the reconciliation between the two contradictory statements of Rav. Ella, says the Gemara, there's another way of explaining Rav. And that is Rabbi Dosa, Tarti Koma, Rabbi Dosa, Enochinami, holds that Yad Poel, Ala Tachtona, and he has no right to quit, and he'll be basically penalized for that if the Balabayas is going to suffer a loss by having to replace him for the balance of the day, and there's going to be a certain expenditure here, so that the poel, instead of getting five for half the work, he's only going to get four because it's going to cost the Balabai six to replace him. That's called Yado al Tachtona. He had no right to quit. And Rabbi Dosa applies that equally to not just a kabbalah, but also to a poel schir yom. However, that doesn't mean that we're stuck with a stira in two statements of Rav, because Rav sovrele kavase bechada upolagale bechada. Rav accepts the shita Rabbi Dosa in one case, namely the case of a kabbalah, and that's yado al hatachtona, and Rabbi Dosa is right. Upolagale bechada, but he disagrees with him about a poel schir yom. Now, it seems to me, just as a side comment here, that what the Gemara is assuming is that the Chachamim of Rabbi Dosa would hold Yodo al-Helyona, not only in the case of a poel sachir, and in that case Rav accepts the Chacham against Rabbi Dosa, but even in the case of a kablon. Despite the fact that the kablon was hired for a full job, he, the kablon, still has rights to be chozebo, and therefore yodo ala elyona, according to the Shitas Chachamim, because in that context, when the Gemara says Rav sovrele kavase bechada, means he's accepting Rav Dosa in one, it sounds like he's passing like Rav Dosa against the Chachamim. If you don't say so, then it's very odd that Rav would have made the statement halacha ki Rabbi Dosa. If everything that Rav accepts la halacha is a reflection of the Chachamim, why would Rav have said halacha ki Rabbi Dosa? So it would seem that the machlokes between Rabbi Dosa and the Chachamim is a very extreme, two polar extremes, where on the one hand Rabbi Dosa holds yodo al hatachtona not only in the case of kablon but even in the case of poel, of a schir yom. The Chachamim say yodo al ha'elyona not only in the case of a poel schir yom but even in the case of a kablon. That's what it seems to me. And that's a big chiddush, because I would think logically in the case of kablon, you know, everyone would have to agree to Rabbi Dosa's position. You can't argue. I mean, how could the poel kablon have rights to quit midday when he committed himself to present his balabais, his employer, with a final product, a full job? But maybe there's an inalienable right for all Polim, granted by the Torah, Avodah Hehem V'lo Avodim L'Avodim, to be Chozer Bahem, and that includes even a Kavlan as well. That's the position of the Chachamim. In any event, getting back to the Gemara now is going to offer another possibility to interpret the words of the Mishnah, again the Mishnah back on Daf Ayin Vav, of Kol HaChozer Bo Yodo Ala Tachtona. It's not coming to tell me, as we thought, that even in the case of a Poel, it's Yodo Ala Tachtona, reflecting the sheet of Rabbi Dosa, but really Rabbi Dosa himself would except that in the case of a poel schir yom, he could be chozer bo before the day is gone, and yodo al hel yono, he doesn't get penalized in any way. His wages will be prorated for the amount of hours or the amount of the job that he did complete. Says the Gemara, Ibai Seima, even if I accept this distinction that Rabbi Dosa only presented Yodo al HaTachtona as a shita with regard to a kablon, but not with regard to a schir yom, but Kol HaChozer Bo Yodo al HaTachtona, what was this line in the Mishnah coming to teach us? L'kidisanya, to teach us something about a brisa, which means a subject of mocher and lokech, a sale, in which one of the two parties, whether it's the seller or the buyer, decides, I want out. And it would seem that they already committed themselves to this sale. In fact, at least part of the payment was already delivered by the lokech to the mocher, by the buyer to the seller. But the Braisa records that Kol HaChozer Bo Ketzad, there is a possibility, although it's highly, it's not recommended, but there is a halachic legal possibility to be Chozer Bo. Ketzad, for example, in the case, says the Braisa, HaReisha Mochar Sod L'Chaver Belef Zuz, they agreed on a sale of a piece of real estate for 1,000 Zuz, V'nosan Lo Mos Mehen Masayim Zuz. The buyer at this point is only passing on to the mocher, to the seller, 200 zuz, only one-fifth of the value that they agreed to pay for the field. Well, now the question becomes, is there a kinyan here that is irreversible? And the answer is no, it's not irreversible. He only paid 200 zuz. He didn't give him the whole sum of 1,000 zuz. And therefore, both the mocher and the lokech have rights to back down from the deal. It's not irreversible. And now the question is, what happens? What do we do at a point in which either the mocher or the lokech decide, I want to renege and get out of this deal, out of this sale? So the Bryce establishes the following two rules. Rule number one, Bizman Sha Mocher Chozer Bo, if the seller has decided he wants to renege on the deal, I don't want to sell you this field, is Yad Lokech Al Elyona, then we give the preferential treatment to the buyer. Why? Because he's been crossed up by the seller. Now, how does this Yodo al Yona, this preferential treatment, express itself? Rata, he has two options now, the lokeach. Again, he cannot force the mocher to sell him the field in its entirety, but Omerlo, he could say to the mocher, I'll give you a choice. Either refund the money I paid you, and let's make believe we never got into this deal, or give me at least 20% of the karka, which corresponds to the 20% of the funds that I transferred to you. In the Lashon of the Braisa, Tainli Ma'osai, Tainli Karka Kenegin Ma'osai. And we still haven't even gone to the goal line. You know, we still haven't finished the entire story here about Yodo al Yona, meaning the Lokech is in the superior position, because not only does he have the option of forcing the mocher's hand to sell him 20% of this piece of karka, keneged the 200 zuz of the 1,000 zuz that he paid, but more than that, the price establishes mehechan magbio, that we know the karka, that real estate fits, this is in an agricultural society, into three different categories. There's idis, that's the best of the best. You know, it's a field that's, you know, exposed to sun, and air, and it's this rain and so forth. That's an iddis. That's a field that everybody wants to buy. It's really mivukash. It's a hot number on the market. Then there's something called ziburis on the other extreme. That's the lowest level. And then in the middle we have beinonis. Now, at this point, the lokeach has rights to a piece of karka. He can demand 20% of the karka of the deal. Mina idis, says the rice. He can demand the highest level, the highest quality. That's because it was the mocher crossed up the lokeach. But now we switch it around. This is rule number two in the braiso. Bizman shalokeach chozer bo. If it was the buyer who says, I don't want to buy your field, then yad mocher al yon. We give the mocher a superior position because he's been crossed up now by the reneging, the reversal of the lokeach. What's the mocher's yad al yonah? How does it express itself? Ratza, the mocher has two options. Omer lahelech ma'osecha. Here, I don't want the whole deal. It was a bad day for me when I signed this contract, so to speak. Take your money back and go home. But ratza omer lo. And again, what I said was really not accurate, I apologize, because in truth, the mocher does want to go through with this sale. It's the lokeach now who backed out of the deal. So, heilich mo'osecha means, you know what, if you're not buying the whole karka, then my decision would be to opt for just refunding your money as if nothing happened, because to me, I want to sell the whole karka, nothing but the whole karka. I'll find a different buyer. But Ratza Omer Lo, if the mocher does want at least to get part of the sale, because he would like to sell the entire karka, is Helech Karka Keneged Mo'osecha, here I'll give you, you know, 1/5, 20% of the karka that we agreed to in this transaction, but Me'echan Magbio, here's where the mocher gets a really high position. Minaziburis, I'm going to give you the lowest quality level of karka, and that's what you have to take, like it or not. Rav Shimon Gamliel now makes a statement, and we're going to see a lot of problems that are going to arise from this statement. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer melamdin osen, we really want to discourage those who enter into such a transaction, a buyer and a seller, from reneging on the sale. And perhaps we should give both the mocher and the lokeach some sort of an option, a recommendation, to guarantee that the deal is clinched even when only part of the funds have been transferred from the lokeach over to the mocher. So what do they do? He says the following, Molamdim osim shlo yachzeru keitzad. Kosev lo, the mocher writes the following nusach to the lokeach. I assume that this is being written in a shtar, a document that will be signed, and there will be testimony attesting to the truth of the document. Ani ploni ben ploni, macharti soda plonis leploni. So the mocher in first person mentions his name, and of course the field, and the name of the lokeach. The 1,000 zuz, the agreement was on 1,000 zuz. But the lokech is only capable of forking over 200 zuz, so the shtar continues and says, V'nosan li mehem masayim zuz. He only put down on the table masayim zuz at this point. What about the 800 zuz, the balance of the payment? Hareini noshebo shmona meos zuz. And I become like the lender, and he, the borrower, he has basically borrowed 800 zuz. In other words, as if there's a fictitious transaction here in which the lokech actually gave the full 1,000 zuz to the mocher, ke'ilu. The mocher says, I'm going to give you back 800 zuz, and you owe me that as an outstanding loan. Is kana. Rav Shimon Gamliel says this agreement will clinch the kinyan in such a way that no one could be chozer bo, because now the balance of the payment, the 800 zuz that's outstanding, is not payment for the field, but it's rather the return of a loan. Umachzelo sashar afilu yachar kamashonim. Whenever the lokeach pays up his chov, the debt of 800, that's when the mocher will receive, as a malva, so to speak, in quotation marks, he will receive his payment of the chov. Now, the interesting language here, which the Gemara is going to pick up on this later, afilu lacha kama shanim, sounds as if the lova in this case was really the lokeach, but we'll call him the lova, could pay back the chov in small amounts over the course of a long period of time, in drips and drabs, in small increments. But in any event, at this point, the Gemara wants to understand, what does the Braisa mean that if the Mocher reneges on the deal, this is back to the Tanakama of the Mishnah, then the Lokeach will be able, through this Yado Al Helyona principle, to collect from the, if he wants to get the 20% of the karka, from the best quality of the karka. Omar Mar, Mehechon Magbio, Mina Idis. Kasalka Daitka, at this point, the Gemara thinks that Meidis Din Achasov, that let's say the Mocher has many, many different properties that he owns, and the Lokech has a right now to collect from the best of all the fields that he has. Not from the best part of the field that's worth 1,000 zuz upon which the transaction was made, but rather any piece of karka that's possessed, that's in the ownership of this mocher. And the Gemara doesn't like that. And the Gemara says the following, V'lo yehei ela balchov. Why should the lokeach have greater rights than that of a balchov? Meaning the mocher is basically a balchov. He owes, in this case, karka to the lokeach. Utnan, we have a Mishnah. And the Mishnah establishes that balchov dino bibenonis, when a balchov collects karka because the lova doesn't have liquid assets, funds to pay up his debt, so therefore instead of collecting from mos, from domim, he collects from karka. The balchov has the right to collect a decent piece of karka, not the lowest level, but the medium level, not the highest level. So therefore, the Gemara says that you can only see the mocher in this case. Again, we're not happy with the fact that he reneged on this decision, rescinded his das. But nevertheless, even when he cancels this, he only owes a certain chov, you know, of karka to the tune of 200 zuz to the lokeach. And as a balchov, there's no reason why the malva, in this case the lokeach, should have rights to collect from anything better than benonis. Theod, and furthermore, there's another illogical principle here. Ha'ara de yoiv zuze. There was a piece of karka that they agreed upon in the original transaction, and the lokeach bought that karka. If he's getting only one fifth of that karka, 20% of that karka, he should be paid for that from that piece of karka that the agreement was made upon, not from other karkos. Those other karkos are not relevant to the sale. The sale was made on one particular piece of karka. And this is going to force the Gemara to reinterpret the goveu from Idis, what that means. For first, let's just, before we read the Gemara's offers two interpretations of what it means here in this. Let's just mention that on a Doraisa level, the Balchov doesn't even collect from Beinonis, he collects from Ziburis. The Chachamim made a Takana to make it a little bit more attractive for a person to lend money, a rich person to lend money to a poor person, and they said, well, you'll be able to collect from Beinonis, even though the Torah only allows him Ziburis. Now, we could ask the following question. The Gemara doesn't ask its kasha from the fact that Lokeach can be chozer bo, and he, the Lokeach, if he rescinds his agreement, the Mocher gives him ziburis and not beinonis. I mean, again, you could ask the question, well, let him be like a balchov, and if the Lokeach reneges, then the Mocher owes the Lokeach just a piece of karka, but there's no reason why he should have to give him, he should be able to give him ziburis, let him give him beinonis. And the answer is because even if he's a balchov, hamidu has dino kedin Torah. In this case, where we want to give the mocher a superior position because it was lokeh who messed up the mocher, let's go back to the Din Torah. And the Din Torah is that a Baal Chov collects from Ziburis. Now, if the lokeach decides, in a case where the mocher reneges on the agreement, to exercise his rights to say, give me my mos, which means, and here we have a marsha, that the marsha wants to be machadesh, that when the lokeach decides to exercise his rights within the context of the two options that we gave him, because the mocher reneged on the agreement, and he says, ten li ma'osai, it means, she'ekayim ha-mekach keneged ha-mos she'nosan, v'yim kein tzorch l'kabel mikarka she'kona v'lo mishar nechosim. Now that's very interesting. The Marsha, and this is a curveball here, wants to suggest that even in a case where the lokeach says ten li ma'osai, he means give me the piece of karka keneged my mos, and obviously that's going to certify this transaction. The lokeach could have no rights to any other karkos other than this one karka. But in any event, let's get back now to the sugya itself. We're looking for an explanation for the fact that the Braisa establishes that the lokeach, in event that the mocher reneges, has rights to collect, if he so desires, karka of Idis. Why? Omar of Nachbar Yitzchak, may Idis Sheba. What it means is not that the lokeach has a right to demand a piece of karka that's owned somewhere in, you know, in amongst the various fields, the real estate of the mocher. No, it means idis sheba, the best of this piece of karka. Now, let's say it's a large field. For Elif Zuz, you get a large field, and there's a certain part of the field which is located in a place that allows for a lot of sunlight, a lot of rain, and that's called idis. Now, that's the case where the mocher was chozerbo. Now, let's say the lokeach was chozerbo. He wants to renege on this agreement. Then the mocher can give him ziburis, and once again, says Rav Nachman Yitzchok, mi ziburis sheba, from the lowest quality karka within the field that was transacted. Only that particular field. Everything is focusing on that field. Now again, there is an element here of knas, of a penalty, because as we said before, a Baal Chov collects from Beinonis, and here the lokeach, in event that the mocher reneged from the agreement, is allowed to collect from Ziburis, albeit Ziburis of this piece of karka, the transaction karka, but nevertheless, why does he get Idis and not Beinonis? And the answer is there's a Knas element here. And that will explain also in the case where the Lokeach decide to renege, why the Mocher can pawn off a piece of Ziburis and shove it onto the Lokeach, because the Lokeach is being penalized for the fact that he reneged on this agreement. Now the Gemara offers a second explanation of the rights of lokeach to collect idis. Rav Acha b'Rei d'Rav Ika Amar afilu tema miidis nechasov staman dezoven arav yalfa zuzi ozli mozel umazbin umezabein nichse. Now the Gemara comes up with the following principle, that when a person purchases a piece of land at a very, very high sum, in this case, Elif Zuz, that's a massive, awesome amount of money, then the buyer will have to sell other items in order to gather together these funds. He'll sell small pieces of land, perhaps. He might sell metaltal and movable objects. Who knows what he's going to sell in order to amass such a sizable, you know, sum of money to pay 1,000 Zuz for the karka. And therefore, when the mocher decides to renege, havile kinizak, he now basically has caused a financial loss to the lokeach. Not just the lokeach, of course, is disappointed that he can't buy the karka that he so eagerly wanted to buy, but what about all these little objects, lesser value objects, that, you know, the sum total of which, he, after he sold them, you know, amasses amount, he amasses a wealth of 1,000 zuz to buy this karka. Now, all the things that he sold, you know, he sold at a slash price. You know, whenever you sell something that's secondhand, you get a fraction of its value. And not only that, go ahead and buy something to replace it. You know, it's a real loss. And although technically you can't say that the mocha was a mazik mamish because it's only an indirect hezek of grama, but nevertheless, the Chazal wanted to institute a penalty, imposing that penalty upon the mocher because of all the loss that he's causing to the lokeach, and therefore they treated him, the mocher, as a mazik utnan, and therefore we can apply the principle that applies to tort law to collecting compensation for damages anizokin shomin lahem biyidis. That the nizak, when he collects from the mazik, he collects from the best of the best. Right? That's called meitav. And here too, when the lokeach collects from the mocher, he's going to collect for the best of the best. That's one dimension of seeing and defining the mocher as a mazik. And that's where iddis comes into play. We're borrowing iddis from the laws of nizikin, where the nizak collects from the mazik's iddis as compensation for his loss. So too, here the lokech has a right to collect from iddis shebinachosav. Now, keep in mind, according to Rav Acha, there's a gevaldig chiddush here, which the Gemara initially was hesitating to accept. And that is that all the properties owned by the mocher are, in a sense, meshubah to this lokeach in event that the mocher backs down on the deal. That gives the lokeach rights to collect from any piece of karka, anywhere on the face of the earth, no matter how good of a quality it is. That's called iddis. And the reason for that is because the mocher is now being defined, albeit by this within the framework of this takonis chachamim, as a mazik. Again, we're not going to call him a mazik mamish. In other words, we're not going to go around and make an evaluation of how much of a loss did the lokeach suffer by selling all his possessions in order to gather together the 1,000 zuz. That's not so. We're going to look at the most that he paid, and we're going to evaluate the hezek in terms of that sum of money. And within the context of that sum of money, which in this case is 200 zuz, we're going to define and view the mocher as a mazik, allowing the lokeach as the nizak to collect that 200 zuz worth from the iddis of any properties which the mocher owns. The iddis, the best of the best of all the mocher's many, many properties. The Ritva is the one who points out, but we said it on our own, that the mazik is not technically a mazik. I'm sorry, the mocher is technically not a mazik because it's only grumim. Grumim and nezikin is potur, but this is a knas derabanan because then they're not happy with the fact that mocher is backing down from the deal to consider him like a mazik. Now, there also is a concept that we've discussed in the past called garmi. The Ravid here wants to suggest that when the Gemara calls the mocher a mazik, it has in mind dina de garmi, and therefore he's being paid, he's paying up in essence like a mazik would pay to the nizak, and that's where the iddis comes in. In any event, just in summary, we have to keep in mind that up until Rav Acha's major breakthrough, if we take, for example, the Havamina of the Gemara and Rav Nachman's answer, the Braisa never meant to say that the lokeach has rights when the mocher reneges to collect from any and all of the mocher's property on the iddis shebo, even all the properties that were not part of this transaction. That was, the Gemara was resisting that. Rav Acha is the one who's willing to open the floodgates, break new ground, and take this revolutionary approach to allow a right to the lokeach to collect from any of the possessions, any of the properties of the mocher, because we've defined and classified the mocher in this case as a mazik. Again, all this within the context of a takanas chachamim, unless you go with the Ravid's approach, that there's dina digarmi. The Gemara now analyzes the next part of the Braisa, and finds a stira between this braisa, quoting Rav Shimon Gamliel, and another statement elsewhere of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer melamdin osan shelo yachzeru ketzad kosev lo ani ploni ben ploni. You may recall that Rav Shimon Gamliel wanted to recommend a nusach hashtar that would clinch the deal in such a way that no one can rescind and break up the transaction. And this was this whole nusach that we spoke about a few minutes ago of I sell the land at 1,000 zuz. It's as if I accepted, I received 1,000 zuz. The mocher says, even though now I'm receiving 200 zuz, the balance, the other 800 zuz, is a chov. That makes it irreversible. No one could rescind and nullify this transaction. So the Gemara says, now let's ask ourselves, what does Rav Shimon Gamliel hold in terms of the kinyan itself? Was there a kinyan that's irreversible when the lokeach pays 200 zuz? And the answer is no. Because that's why Rav Shimon has to come up with this beautiful new shtar. Time of the kosav lehachi, holo kosav lokani, had it not been for the fact that the mochen lokech agreed to sign this mutual agreement and write it up in a shtar, which would make the deal irreversible, and no one has the right to renege and rescind on the deal, if not for that, in the absence of this shtar that Rav Shimon Gamliel is advocating, lo kani, the mechira was not complete. And now the Gemara is going to go ahead and quote a braisa in which Rav Shimon Gamliel certainly is of the opinion that even a down payment on a field is enough to clinch the deal. We know that karka is nicknames for kesef, and kesef could mean even part of the value and the sum they agreed upon in terms of the purchase, and the rest is a chov. How do we prove this? For Asanya, we have a braisa, no sein a ravon lichavero. What happens here is that the mocher, although he's allowing the lokeach to pay only part of the fee, part of the payment for the field, but nevertheless he wants some sort of a security to sort of discourage the lokeach from backing down out of the deal. After all, the mocher has now committed himself to a deal, a transaction on a major piece of real estate, and he's only getting part of the funds of the payment. He wants to know that he's not going to be messed up if the mocher backs out of the deal. And here, who knows how many other potential buyers were waiting online to buy this field. Instead, he sold it to this Joe. And this lokeach decides he wants to back out. So what they do is they accept a kind of a collateral, a mashkon, from the lokeach. And what do they do with this eravon, with this mashkon? This is going to to set up a framework in which the lokeach will be penalized if he backs down from the deal. The omar lo. And at this point, the mocher, just 1 second now, the braisa says, hanosei neiroven lechavero. So we're talking about the lokeach. So the buyer says the following. You know what? You want to pressure me and really motivate me very strongly not to back down out of the deal. So I'm going to capitulate so that you'll agree to sell me the field. And I'm going to say, imani chozer bi, eravoni mochulucha. This amount of money that I've given you should be a collateral that in event that I back out of the deal, that money is yours. And that's going to be the penalty that the lokech accepted upon himself in event that he backs down from the deal. Vahallah. The mocher says, because again, we don't know who's going to back down to the deal, so the mocher wants to make sure the lokeach doesn't back down to the deal, but at the same time, the lokeach is investing money here. He wants to make sure the mocher doesn't back down to the deal. So at this point, the mocher makes the following statement, and I'm assuming that this is all written up in a shtar. Im ani chozer bi, if I decide I don't want to sell you this field, I'm out of here, is echpol lecha arvonecha. Whatever sum of money you gave me in collateral, I'll double that and give it to you. And the Tanakhama here, that's Rabbi Yossi, says in this Kaimu Atnoim, that this kind of an agreement with all its conditions is valid and binding. Rabbi Yossi says that, you know what, if you analyze the logic here of validating this kind of an agreement, then it's l'taime the Amar Asmachta Kanya. This is only Rabbi Yossi l'shitaso, who's of the opinion that Asmachta Kanya. Asmachta Kanya is a sugya back at the beginning of Bava Kamma. It's also a sugya in Sanhedrin on Daf Chav Dalid, and it means when people promise things to pay up if they don't fulfill certain conditions, you know, I'll give you such and such a sum of money. And according to one school of thought, Asmachta lo kanya, you know, all these promises to give money based on the fact that I won't, you know, I'm penalizing myself because I won't fulfill a certain condition. There's no real das here. You know, every hischaivus, every transaction in monetary law requires a full-fledged gemiras das, an absolute decision on the part of the mischaiv. And here, if it's an asmachta kind of thing, because, you know, he's telling him, oh, I'm going to pay you double, I'll pay you this, I'll pay you that, he doesn't really believe that that's going to happen, that that's going to come into fruition. Some say that gambling itself is an asmachta, you know, because when a person plays poker, he thinks he's going to win. So he puts down on the table X number of chips, and it's a value of money, he thinks he's going to win. And lo and behold, as luck wouldn't have it, he loses. Is that a binding transaction? Maybe it's not, and that's why Misachik B'Kuvius Posseliedus. But in any event, Rabbi Yossi happens to be of the opinion that Asmachta Kanya, and therefore this condition in which the Lokeh took upon himself a penalty, or the Mocher took upon himself, if there'll be a penalty, is absolutely binding. That's called Asmachta Kanya. Omer Rav Shimon Gamliel. Now, first I skipped Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Dayo Sheyikne Kneged Ervono. In other words, this agreement is not binding, but the Eravon is going to be viewed as a down payment that's irreversible. So what it means is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that all these accepted self-imposed penalties, you know, with all these conditions, is not binding. Nobody has to pay that up. But what will be a kiyuma mekach, what will be a valid transaction, is the value of the mashkon. If, let's say, the mashkon is valued at 100, then the sale will go through at that 100, and that's binding. On Rav Shimon Gamliel, and this is critical because we want to compare that statement of Rav Shimon Gamliel to the previous brisa that quotes Rav Shimon Gamliel, Bamedvar Mamurim, when do we say that if one or the other, that's either the mocher or the lokeach, backs down out of the deal, that there's a kinyan kenegeda mashkon, which means that the kinyan is not binding on the entire field for the full value, for the full amount of karka, but rather only corresponding to the value of the mashkon. That's only bisman she'omar lo ervoni yikon. If the statement of, for example, the lokeach is that my eravon should be a kinyan, meaning this money that I'm putting down should serve as a kinyan, in such a case, the lokeach only has an absolute kinyan on that parcel of karka that is shava, that's worth the value of the eravon. Because again, really he said eravi yikon, which is a kind of an inner contradiction. He's saying that this collateral, this down payment, is now going to be kona the entire field. Well, that he can't do. But in a case where he didn't say a ravon, ervoni yikon, which as I said before is a kind of a contradiction in terms, because if it's an eravon, then it's not a kinyan on the karka. It can't be a kinyan on the karka if it's a ravon. It's only konkona kenegad ravon. But if instead he cuts out this whole discussion about a ravon, just the lokeh puts down 500 zuz on the table, that's what he transfers over to the mocher, then kana, in such a case, the mekach is absolutely binding. No one could reverse and rescind this mekach. Umachzil sashar filach kamashonim, and the balance of the 500 zuz in this case becomes an outstanding loan. So we see clearly there of Shimon Gamliel's opinion, his position is that a down payment is a kinyan, an absolute kinyan on the entire transaction, the entire full karka, even though he only put down a certain percentage of the funds. the balance is a chov, but he's kona the entire piece of kaka in an irreversible way. It's a binding kinyan. And that contradicts Rav Shimon Gamliel in the first brisa that we saw, because there Rav Shimon Gamliel was advocating a certain kind of a nusach in order to guarantee that this deal is a clinched deal that's irreversible. And it's only when they wrote this fancy shtar, you know, ani ploni ben ploni machati sadeh plonis, and blah, blah, blah. Only with that shtar does the kinyan become irreversible. But in and of itself, the down payment would not be a kinyan, would not engender a kinyan on the entire field. Whereas here in the second brisa, clearly Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that unless he said this very strange language of Ervoni Yikon, if he just put down 500 zuz as a down payment, the kinyan is irreversible. It's clinched on the entire field. Lo kasha, says the Gemara. And now the Gemara introduces a very fundamental principle in the laws of Mekach u'Memkar. Ha! The Brisa, in which Rav Shimon Gamliel said that there's no binding kinyan unless they added this whole fancy shtar, deka ayel v'nofik azuzeh. Let me just read a little bit further. Ha! But the Brisa that says that even without that fancy shtar, even the bare bones down payment is enough to clinch the mekach in an irreversible way. Deloka ayel v'nofik azuzeh. Now, literally, what we're talking about is where the mocher is constantly barraging, no, knocking down the doors of the lokeach to get his payment. That's called ayel v'nofik azuzeh. Who is it? We're talking about the mocher. And what's ayel? Ayel means he's going up to the house of the lokeach. He's machazer acharav. He's running after him. V'nafik azuzan. He wants to get his money, the balance of the payment. No, in other words, now you have to ask yourself the following: when you're analyzing the mindset of the mocher and you want to know whether he had full das in a full gemiras das that clinches the kinyan on the whole field or not, we have to ask ourselves: is what's motivating the mocher? He really wants the deal. In other words, he wants the transaction. That's a full gemiras das. So no, he just wants the money. And the difference is going to be where he didn't get the money. If he didn't get the money, he only got half of the money in this case, then if his motivation here is not to sell the field as much as to get the money, he'd really rather not sell the field. He just needs the money badly. That's why he's running around banging on the doors of the lokeach on a constant daily basis to get his money. Then if the lokeach is dilly-dallying, and at this point he hasn't paid the last zuz, and the mocher has not received full payment, and the mocher didn't have gemiras das, because what's motivating the mocher here, obviously, in the case of ayel v'nofik azuzeh, is getting the money. He didn't get the bucks. And if he didn't get the bucks, then he didn't have a full gemiras das, and therefore the kinyan is not irreversible, that's a double negative, but rather it is reversible. And that's going to be the brisa that we saw that Rav Shimon Gamliel came up with this, you know, advocated this fancy shtar, as we called it, with the nusach, that would clinch the deal. But the brisa that speaks about a down payment as an absolute kinyan that clinches the entire transaction on the whole field, and nothing can allow neither the mocher nor the lokeach to be chozer b'hem, that's called loka ayel nafik azuzeh. I mean, the mocher simply wants to sell the field. Money here, money there. You know, he'll get his money eventually down the line, but that's not what's pushing him. He's not desperate for funds. He thinks it's a good deal. That's how he makes his profit, and he sells real estate in this case. The balance of the payment here, meaning from the 500 to the 1,000, that 500 is going to be an outstanding chov. And this explanation, this reconciliation of what we thought was a contradiction in two brises, as far as Rav Shimon Gamliel, is based on the statement of Rava, the Amar Rava, Haiman dezovin midi lechavri, when a person sells something to his friend, and even if a Maisa Kinyan was made, the Kinyan is not complete. Why? Because he is ka'ayel v'nofik azuzeh, the mocher is desperate to get the funds. He's banging down the doors of the lokeach to pay him up. And therefore, he indicates that he's motivated not for the sale, but for the money. And he hasn't gotten the money. And therefore, lo kani. Lo kani means that either the mocher or the lokeh can back down from the deal and invalidate the deal. But lo ka'il v'nafik azuzei. However, if it was a, shall we say, a typical regular case where the lokeh has paid only part of the payment and the mocher has not received a major part of the payment, but nevertheless he's cool about that, he's calm, he's laid back, he's not running around to force and press the lokeh to pay up, kani, then it means that he really wanted to sell whatever he's selling, and there was a full gemiras das for the sale that clinches the sale and makes it irreversible. Now, at this point, the Gemara, almost on a tangent, but a short tangent, goes back to the language of the Braisa. If you remember, the Braisa says, when the balance of the payment is an outstanding loan, then it says, afilu li'achar kamashonim. The lokeach pays up that loan even over the course of time. V'yomar Rava, and Rava derives a conclusion from that. Haiman di ozfe mea zuze lechavri. A person lends to his friend a sum, a handsome sum, of 100 dinrim. Upari zuza zuza. And the Lova decides to pay him in small amounts, small increments, one zuz at a time. Imagine if he every week he brings a zuz, it's going to take 100 weeks until he finally pays up. Says Rava Piron Havi, we could be medayik from the Lashon of the Braisa, afilach kamashonim that enochinami, this is a valid payment. Which means that in Choshen Mishpat, in a court of law, the mocher, in this case the malve, has no rights to say, well, I didn't receive my piron. This is not acceptable, that he pays me in small increments. However, el de islei tarumas kabei, the mocher, or the malve, has complaints against the lova, because, you know, the omelay of sadatiyah minah, you know, had I gotten the full sum of 100 zuz in one fell swoop, I could do a lot with that sum. But instead, you gave me one zuz at a time, I suffered a loss. I can't really benefit from, you know, from that sum of money that I'm getting in small increments extended over a long period of time. Had I received the entire sum of mea zuz, biyachad, in one fell swoop, then I certainly would have had greater options to benefit, to invest, to buy and sell with 100 zuz. That would have been great. So you caused me a loss, but there's nothing I can do about it. I can only ask you to do better in the future, and you, from your perspective, should be asking me for mechila on Erev Yom Kippur. That's called taromas. Now, there's a very interesting chiddush here in the Ramah. I'm not sure where the Ramah got it from, but in Choshe Mishpat Siman Ayin Dalet, he writes that this whole discussion only applies in a Piron Kodim Zmano, which means that the actual time period to pay back the loan, that, you know, that final end zone time, has not come about yet. And that's why the Lova has a right to pay in small amounts. But if it was Higia Zmana Piron, if it's already after the time, you know, the time allotment for paying back the loan has expired, then indeed the malva has a right to say, I'm not going to receive from you anything less than the entire payment per vasachas, because at this point the lova owes a chov, and if he owes a chov, then he's got to pay that chov. Paying part of the chov is not a payment to the chov. The malva can insist that he pay the entire sum. The only problem I have with this is that if we're talking tofzmano, why did the Gemara say yesh lo lov taromis? I mean, as long as it's tofzmano and the lova is returning the loan, albeit piecemeal, but before he's actually obligated from the goodness of his heart, he's being makdim this. So why is the malv ever right to complain about that? I don't know. But that's the Ramah. Now the Gemara goes back to what we were discussing before, the principle of, is the mecher absolutely clinched irreversibly if the mocher receives part payment? And the Gemara tells the following story, Ahu gavra dezovin lechamra lechavre. There was a story about someone who sold a donkey, a chamor, to his friend, who posh lechad zuzah. Let's say they agreed that the price would be 100 zuz. The lokeach paid 99 zuz. He has an outstanding 1 zuz to complete it. And the mocher ka'ayel v'nofek azuza. You know, he's trying to get him to pay even that last zuz, which means that he, the mocher, is desperate for the money and he hasn't received that last zuz. Yosef Ravashi kama ayin ba. When this story came to the attention of Ravashi, he was looking into it, ki hai gavna mai, and he asked himself, how do I judge this case? Kani o lo kani? Do I assume on the one hand that since the mocher received 99% of the funds, at this point the mocher has full gemiras das, and he can't rescind, he can't break up the kinyan? Or do I say no lo kani because he was mechazer adamim, he was ayel v'nofek azuza, he wants every last zuz. He's motivated by the sale for the money that he's getting. Again, every mocher is motivated by the money, but the question is, you know, there's one level to say that he's not desperate for the funds immediately, and therefore he has a full gemiras das now, even though he only got a down payment. The other way of saying is, no, he's wild about the money, and the money is really what he needs so desperately, and therefore he's not, in his mind, he's not at home with, you know, comfortable with this mekach. There's no complete gemiras das. In this case, where the mocher received 99% of the funds, Rav Ashi didn't know how exactly to judge this case. Amalei Rav Mardechai Rav Ashi, Hachi Omar Avimi Mahagronya, Mishmei Derava, Zuza Kizuzi Dami Velokani. Even if it's only one zuz left for the deal, the payment is 99%, but he's still missing that last zuz, since it's Ka'ayel V'nofek Azuze, therefore there's no Gemiras Das, and the Mocher can back down. And, you know, you're tempted to think that at this point in the development of the sugi, that maybe the concept of Rav of Ka'ayel V'nofek Azuzi is not exactly the way we think it. You know, we've been couching it in terms of an umdana, psychological assumption. We evaluate his mindset, and we see that he's desperate for the funds. Maybe Rav is saying something more of a halachic, conceptual halacha, a din, not just a psychology. And maybe what he means to say is that Alpidin, in the case of Ka'ayel V'nofek Azuzi, the halacha establishes that the kinyan is got to be clinched by the payment, not just by a shava pruta, a chefta shel kesef, but by the payment itself. And the payment has to be forthcoming. The payment has to be total. If the one zuz is missing from the payment, then there was no payment. And therefore, the kinyan is not complete. That's how we define whether the kinyan is reversible or not reversible, whether it's absolutely clinched and complete or not. Amalei Rav Acha, Brei de Rav Yosef, the Rav Ashi, Vaha Amrinon, Mishmei de Rav Akani. Here you're quoting Rav as saying Lo Kani. We have a tradition that Rav had said Kani. How do we reconcile these two traditions? Amalei titargem shmaitach b'mocher sadeu, and here we go on to dafayin chesam aleph mipnei rasa. There are situations where even if the mocher is running around trying to get that very last payment and the last cent, squeezing, pressuring the lokeach, still nevertheless there is an absolute total gemiras das on the part of the mocher, which makes the kinyan complete and irreversible. And what's that situation where the mocher was desperate to sell the karka? Again, the fact that he's running around trying to get the most, that means he's just trying to convince the lokeach, you know, get the lokeach into a position where he won't be chozer bo, he cannot be chozer because he paid every last red cent. You'll see this in Rashi, by the way, about eight lines down from the top of the page. Yochel lomer lekacha yisi mechazer achar amos liknos sodek tana tachteha. Okay, fine. But there's any number of explanations as to why the mocher in this situation was running after lokeach to get him to pay that very last cent. But obviously, the mocher, in a case of a sodek rua, you know, this sod is low quality, it's very hard. You know, you got to you got to scan the entire world of buyers, you know, to find someone who's willing to take this field. It's like an old lame donkey, you know, who wants to buy such an alta? And this is a field that's Ross, as the Mocher is really excited about the fact that Lokech agreed to buy this field. You know, he really, Mocher is really pressed. He really wants to pawn off this field on anyone who's willing to take it. And therefore, he had complete gemiras das, despite the fact that the lokeach has not yet paid him the full sum, and despite the fact that he himself